Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
Everyone awake and ready?
Awake and ready.
Great. Let us pray together. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Peace. Bliss. Amen. With great joy that I'm here this morning and that we can all meet together and focus on the most important topic in the world, that is how to become one with God. This is a reading from God Experience by Swami Ram Dass. It's a talk that he gave on February 11th, 1961. Ram Dass, by constant remembrance of God, you rise beyond body consciousness and dwell in divine consciousness. Question, will one then become God? The answer, you will realize God. As long as body consciousness is there, a sense of separation will remain. So you will be in the physical plane in which there is bondage, misery, ignorance, and darkness. Rise above body idea, and you will become one with the divine. Your life will be full. It will be replete with light, wisdom, peace, power, and joy. You will know that you are immortal. When you think you are the body, there arise in the sense of seeing, sense of hearing, sense of touch, etc., you forget your own self or God. Your whole pursuit becomes a search for objects of the senses, a desire to possess them for enjoyment, and you get caught up in an endless maze. You may be chanting Ram Nam now and again and talking about God, but as long as your main pursuit is of the objects of the senses, you cannot realize Him. You must rise above body consciousness, forget the world, and then you will realize Him. As it is, the world is too much with you. The divine element is ignored and forgotten. The man who is leading a life of the senses cannot imagine the joy one can have by getting over the body idea and living in the divine. In the world, people are engaged in activities of various kinds for the sake of gratifying their senses. The higher pursuit is lost sight of. How to enjoy, how to acquire, how to possess, and how to preserve, that is what engrosses the man's whole attention throughout life. If he is devoted to God at all, it is for the sake of material prosperity, name, fame, and position. This is all that he wants from God, and that is the aim of his worship. He tries to acquire certain things by the grace of God. He forgets that whatever he acquires is impermanent. Either they will fall away from him or he falls away from them. In either case, he becomes miserable. Not only that, but even while he possesses them, he encounters troubles in protecting them. Somebody cheats him, somebody robs him, or something is lost. Then he laments over it, sometimes in regret and sometimes in remorse. Ram Dass does not mean that you should not pursue your legitimate activities in order to earn and look after your family. But of all the things, the one aim that should be kept in view is the realization of God. by looking upon all people as manifestations of God, and by dedicating all your thoughts and actions to Him. The nature of the service you should do be such as will lead you to the perception of God in all beings and creatures. Service done to whom? To God. Not to the human being as such, but as manifestation of God. Service done in the Spirit blesses him that renders it, as well as him that receives it. If, on the other hand, you live only for your own sake, for the sake of your family and relations, your life becomes dry and insipid, and brings you a crop of anxieties and miseries. Your vision becomes thereby so narrow that you find God realization a distant goal. The more circumscribed your vision is, the more miserable you become. You must expand your vision more and more. Only a person with the widest vision can realize God. Only the person with the widest vision can realize God. There are many who are doing sadhana. They do not know why they are doing it. Their conception of God is very limited and narrow. They must have, in the first place, a right conception of God before they try to attain Him. They take Him as an individual, as a person only, who lives in Vaikuntha, in Kailash, in Satyaloka, or in heaven. They adore Him and take His name, do puja to His image. What is the benefit? By the power of faith, they may get something they ask for. But God realization cannot be had that way. You must realize Him as pervading the entire universe and beyond. For that, you must dissolve your ego sense in the vast infinite consciousness of the divine. Then you feel like you are a bird released from the cage, happy and cheerful. You are not bound by anything. You enjoy eternal peace and bliss, because you have united your will with the divine will, your consciousness with divine consciousness, your life with the universal life. Many do sadhana for 30 or 40 years. They say they have not gained anything. The goal they have placed before them is not very clear to them. Who is God? What is God? Saints say that Vaikuntha is within you. Kailash is within you. Heaven is within you. God is within you. They ask you to direct your vision inward, dive into the source of your being. God is the all-pervading Atman. He is changeless, immanent, all-inclusive and transcendent. There is nothing outside Him, nothing beyond Him. In that infinite consciousness, you must lose yourself. Now you are the body consciousness. It is not there. You know that you are present everywhere at the same time. You know that you are the truth, nameless, formless, changeless, birthless, deathless, infinite and eternal. From the personal, you must go into the impersonal. From the changing to the unchanging, from the unreal to the real, and from that which has name and form to that which is nameless and formless. The question is often asked, why do we get our vasanas destroyed? When do we get our vasanas destroyed? When can the desire for worldly enjoyments be completely rooted out? Many are struggling and struggling. They are still in the clutches of the lower desires, physical and mental. How can they get over them? In the Gita is the answer is given. When you surrender yourself to God and get rid of your ego sense, you realize that you are the all-pervading truth and behold the divine everywhere. Till then, the vasanas will go on harassing you. When you have Sarvatman Bhava, the vision and experience that God is He, and everything is He, then the vasanas will be completely destroyed. Now your senses, mind and body, and everything turn divine. There is no room for vasanas, which are the outcome of individual sense. When the individual sense has disappeared, naturally vasanas must go. Unless you remove their source, which is the ego sense, they cannot be eradicated. There is no use cutting the branches for destroying the branches for destroying a tree. It must be pulled up by the roots and thrown away. Then it cannot grow up again. Therefore, lay the axe to the source of sense desires, attachments, clingings to the worldly things. That requires a ceaseless remembrance of God, not merely utterance. When you say Ram, 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 your mind may wander in many directions. The mind must fix itself on God when you repeat the name. What a wonderful, powerful expression of perfect truth. The very ending. When you say Ram, 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 your mind may wander in many directions. The mind must fix itself on God when you repeat the name. And it reminded me that when I was at the ashram, every morning I would get up and make my way to the bhajan hall, to the samadhi place of Papa or Mataji. And at that time, around 5:30, there would be the beginning of Ram Nam that would continue all through the day until 6 o'clock that night. And during that time, the fellow that would bring the coffee and the tea would come by, and so people would take breaks in shifts, so to speak. Some would leave and leave a few to continue to chant, and others would continue to on. When others came back, then they were replaced, and so everybody got their coffee and tea for the morning. And so one morning, the fellow was rather late. He was there usually like clockwork at a certain time. And so the Ram Nam became less and less intense, and suddenly people were standing, looking over at the window, were looking for the coffee tea man. And, Ram Nam almost came to a complete standstill as the man was delayed further and further. And finally, he shows up, and everybody made their way out. And afterwards, then Ram Nam was taken up with exuberance once again. And this is human nature, isn't it? Particularly when we've been someplace for a certain amount of time, Papa would oftentimes tell people to come to the ashram for shorter periods of time and remain intense in their sadhana while they were there. It tended to be that people who would come and stay for longer periods of time would lose their intensity. And suddenly there was gossip about who was doing what, and the mind would tend to wander off to other places. And so even in a holy environment, a sacred vibration such as an ashram, it's not guaranteed that you're going to have perfect God remembrance. God is where you are. But the mind is so caught up with the things of this world. There are many people who are quite enamored with certain labels, certain names of makers. And if you wear those kinds of clothes, then you hold a certain status. Every week we drive down here and we pass by a Prime Outlet Mall, which specializes in name brand clothing and attire and different kinds of things you can buy there. And the parking lot on Sundays is absolutely packed when we're driving by, because people, as I say, are enamored with certain brand names. I remember a comedian one time saying that if he was going to pay $60 for a pair of jeans, it should be his name on the outside of the jeans, not some maker's. And true enough, but we like to have those name brands, and they mean something to people. And we all have brands, we all have things that we attach ourselves. It's as if we have writings on the inside of the walls of the brain. And we refer to those writings. Those help to define us as to who we are and how we fit into this world. I remember as God began to take various things away from me in my sadhana, and at one time I owned a home, and me and the bank, and owned the home and cars and all the rest of the kinds of things. And I didn't think that I was particularly attached to any of these things, but as he began to take them away one by one, I realized that these things helped to define me in my own consciousness, I had inadvertently created triangles, you might say, with different things, and they, by triangulating in my position, it helped me define myself and who I am. So that I had a certain family, I had a certain position, I had a certain profession, I had a home and cars and all the rest of it, and one by one, all of these things were stripped away from me. And I was glad to give them up, but I was surprised at times at how powerful these things acted as symbols to help define who I was. And so we have these things, whether they are outward things or inward things. We can think of ourselves as an intelligent person or as a caring person or as the one who is a helper who helps other people. And I've had all of those kinds of identifications, and just the same as the outward things, God has taken those things away too. Where at times my intelligence, my memory were all taken away. My sense of being a caring, compassionate person, I was put into a situation where I was apparently doing things that were not caring and not compassionate. And so, ultimately, you cannot hang on to anything. And one day, as I was walking from the town that I was living in towards the home that had been provided for me, and absolutely everything had been taken away from me, including as I was walking up the hill, I could feel all of my life force being withdrawn out of me, just like a syringe would draw up blood out of a vein. All the life force was drawn up out of me. And I didn't feel like I could put one more step in front of the next one. And I realized that God had taken absolutely everything, even this life force, this body, and I realized that I could be taken from the body in an instant. And I was happy to go in that moment. I would have been happy for God to go ahead and extract all of the life out and merge myself into His being. But I also realized that not one thing could I call my own. There was nothing that I could refer to that I could say, this is mine. This is even me, because even this life force could be withdrawn. And so no identification was allowed to exist at all. And then there were further, even further kinds of discriminations that must have been made, because there were identifications within the idea, very subtle identifications, about references to myself. When Papa wrote his books, and when he referred to himself, he began to refer to himself in third person as Ram Dass, and not as I and me and mine. And perhaps in the beginning, this was a way of removing the sense of I-ness. But later on, it may have become a way of just simply expressing himself, and that he no longer had any such identifications. Now, this can seem radical to individuals. I must give up everything, even to that degree. And the answer is yes, if you are to realize God completely and totally. Mother once talked about that humility was not something that you could just try on like a pair of clothes. It's not something that the ego can assume, nor is your spirituality. You cannot imagine what it must be like to be a spiritual being and then go about trying to act like that and have the full experience. It's not possible. I remember an individual at the ashram, once again, who used to stand at the back of the line and would make sure everybody went before they did, in a show of humility. But that's what it was. It was a show, because they would make a show of it. They would make sure that everybody else, and if somebody came in late, they would make sure that they took a step in before them. Real humility is joining in with the crowd and having your complete mind upon God. You're not concerned whether you're first, last, middle, whether in the flower ceremony there, whether you get a large amount of flowers or a small amount of flowers, it doesn't make any difference, you see, because your whole attention is swept up into your God self, into your God being. And this is the way that it must be if we are to completely merge our little individuality into the totality of that which is God. We have these wonderful stories from India, and I would like to read to you this one that I think is absolutely wonderful from Sri Ramakrishna. The tiger that lurks behind worldly joys. God is like the wish-yielding tree of the celestial world, which gives whatever one asks of it. So one should be careful to give up all worldly desires when one's mind has been purified by religious exercises. Just listen to a story. A certain traveler came to a large plain in the course of his travels. As he had been walking in the sun for many hours, he was thoroughly exhausted and heavily perspiring. He sat down in the shade of a tree to rest a little. Presently, he began to think what a comfort it would be if he could but have a soft bed there to sleep on. He is not aware that he was sitting under the celestial tree. As soon as the above thought rose in his mind, he found a nice bed by his side. He felt much astonished, but all the same stretched himself out on it. Now he thought to himself how pleasant it would be if there was a young damsel here there to gently stroke my legs. No sooner did the thought arise in his mind than he found a young damsel sitting at his feet and stroking his legs. The traveler felt supremely happy. Presently he felt hungry, and he thought, I got whatever I have wished for. Could I then not get food? Instantly he found various kinds of delicious food spread before him. He at once fell to eating, and having helped himself to his heart's content, stretched himself again on his bed. Now he began to revolve in his mind the events of the day. While thus occupied, he thought, if a tiger should attack me all of a sudden? And in an instant, a large tiger jumped on him, broke his neck, and began to drink his blood. In this way, the traveler lost his life. Such is the fate of men in general. If during your meditations you pray for men or money or worldly honors, your desires will no doubt be satisfied to some extent. But mind you, there is the dread of the tiger behind the gifts you get. Those tigers, disease, bereavements, loss of honor and wealth, etc., are 1,000 times more terrible than the live tiger. Isn't that good? A good story? One of the great pleasures that I have is in working with so many souls as they aspire to grow in God. And naturally enough, as we try to do so, we bump up against many things. There's a wonderful individual that I've done work with through the years who grew up in a family where things were quite difficult, as for many people they are. He had an alcoholic mother and a father who was rather strict and reserved. And so he carried these tendencies with him. But his father was very focused that this individual should get a secure job, something that he could retire with. And so even when he's in his teens, he was talking to him about security and retirement. And this young man had visions of something quite different. He wanted to go out and stretch himself. He wanted to create his own business. And so he had to go against his father's wishes, against his father's fears, really. And instead of listening to his father in these matters, he went out, and much to the bewilderment and astonishment of his parents, he eventually struck out and began his own business and became a very successful businessman as a result. But if he had limited himself to his father's desires and his father's wishes, then he would have remained stuck where he was and would have been a very unhappy soul. Sigmund Freud once said that a wise man defeats his father And this is what he meant by that. That we must go beyond the programming that goes into our minds from very early ages. This individual also, as I said earlier, had an alcoholic mother. And that traveled with him much further into his life because it felt like he must always take care of her. And he must always look after her. I remember another individual that I worked with who had an alcoholic mother. And that when she drank too much when she was home, he learned at an early age, he was 5 or 6 years old, and he could go into the garage and pop the hood on the car, and somehow he knew how to take the wire off of the spark plug there in the car and then close the hood again so that if the mother was very intoxicated, she would come out and try to start the car, and darn it, that car wouldn't start again because he had disconnected the spark plug wire. This is how inventive and how resourceful young minds can be. It's terrific, really. Mother Hamilton talked about that when her father was coming home, that she would be out in the front yard playing as a little girl. And that if he was walking straight down the sidewalk, then she knew everything was all right and she could go on playing. But if he was weaving as he was walking down the sidewalk, she would go inside and get between her mother and her father because she knew trouble was about to happen. And so these things stay with us for a long time through our lives, and sometimes we never resolve them. And they continue on with us into a new lifetime. And so we draw the individuals, we draw the personalities to ourselves, not as punishment, but in order to work these things out. This is something important to remember about karma and the law of cause and effect. It can feel like punishment, but it's there to teach us a lesson. And the lesson is not to limit ourselves to a particular situation, but to go to beyond it. So this individual had to go beyond the programming of taking care of everybody and that everybody else's needs came first in order to really focus his attention upon God within himself and to know himself, to become himself, as he is truly meant to be. We are all, from the very beginning, freed souls within God. But we came into this worldly sphere. We weren't thrown, we were drawn to it. We wanted to have these experiences as individuals. And God said, fine, come into this realm, experience what you would like there, but don't get caught up in it. Don't become identified with it. Because if you do, your mind will become limited. And you will go through a series of successions of lives and deaths. Because you will be so identified with the body that you think that when you die that you have died. And that with that you will have unfulfilled desires. And those unfulfilled desires will bring you back again and again. You see, we as individuals, have created all of this. We have created the conundrum that we find ourselves in. And there's no one else to look to. We don't have to find fault with a God who created these conditions and threw us in against our will or in our ignorance. This is not how it is. That would be a strange and cruel kind of God to do that kind of thing. But God did give us free will as individuals. And how we exercise that free will determines where we will go to next. Lari Mahasya said, make spiritual effort now and your future is bound to improve. But he didn't necessarily say your present will necessarily improve. Because sometimes when you take on your karma, when you take on this opposing force within you, it can almost seem that life gets worse at times. Mother went to great lengths to describe what she had to go through in this mystical crucifixion, and sometimes people can say, well, what do I want with that? That just sounds like a lot of pain and misery. But it's like the individual who went out and was issued some credit cards and decided to have a gay old time of it, and went out and bought whatever they wanted. But one day, all the bills came due, and with karma, you can't just claim bankruptcy, you see, and be free of it all. That's not how it works. You have to pay off the debt. And so when the individual went out and charged all these credits up, and then it became massive, and he was in a world of hurt then. And debtor's prison isn't always a place that you go to. It can be a state of mind. And certainly when you get into debt like that, it can weigh heavily on you. In your determination to pay off these debts now, you have to save your money, and more of your money has to go into paying off debt. And you have less and less that's available to you today. And so you must do that in order to eliminate what you yourself had created. And suddenly it seems like you have more limitations. You can't just take the credit card, go out and spend what you want. Now you must pay for what you want. You have less to pay for. And so paying off your karma is a similar kind of thing. You decide to take on the things that you yourself have created. We can wear labels and identify ourselves with those labels. When I meet somebody who is trying to make changes in their life, and all they want to do is complain about other people in their lives and what they're doing, and they wear a label, what, me change? No way. I want the world to change to accommodate me. And it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. And until that individual wakes up to the fact that the change they need to enact is the change in themselves, not to get the world to change to dance to their tune, to make themselves more comfortable, to do things as the way they would like to do, but that they must make the changes deep within themselves, then they will continue on a path in which the tigers continue to come out and pounce on them, and they can have a pretty rough time of it. Once we decide that the changes we need to make are ones that we need to make, Mahatma Gandhi, the great soul, once wrote that you must become the changes that you wish to see in the world. I know people who are very concerned about pollution in the world and so on, and yet they smoke, they drink, they use drugs, they eat the wrong foods. They put far more pollution into their bodies, percentage-wise, than what mankind puts into the atmosphere or the waters. And yet they get very, very upset about what mankind is doing, and perhaps justifiably so. But unless they make those changes in themselves, then it's easy to just give lip service to it. But it's far more difficult when we go about changing ourselves. If we take that notion, become the change that you wish to see in the world, then we go to work first on ourselves. We start to change those labels. Whatever they are, they're tattooed, so to speak, on the inside of our brain. And we make reference to them. We think of ourselves as that person, and sometimes we try to make changes, and they don't seem to stick. And nothing we do seems to make a difference. And then we'll just finally, in a state of defeatism, say, well, that must be just the way that I am. And do you see how you have just sealed the ego onto your mind in a very powerful way? In order to awaken from that, as Papa writes about here, we must keep the mind upon God, not upon the sins, not upon the mistakes, not upon these labels that we have put upon ourselves. I have had a couple of things that, well, perhaps more than a couple, that I've had to deal with in this lifetime to change in order to know God more completely. And one of the battles has been around food. I'm on the 13th day of a 15-day purification program, and I can tell you it feels wonderful, but it didn't start out that way. It's doing a lot of juicing, and it stirs up a lot of the toxins within the system. And even though my diet had been pretty good beforehand, with this program. It feels very flu-like in the beginning. But then you start to get the benefits of the program, and it feels wonderful. It really does. But one of the things that I have that many family members in previous generations have been obese and morbidly obese. And so this desire to eat and the tendency to put on weight has been there at different times in my life. And it's been something that you can take it as a label that, well, maybe that's just the way that I am. It's genetic. You can think of all kinds of reasons, and some of them have some validity to them. But this is wrong, that if we take that as a label that we begin to wear and we begin to own and we begin to say that must be just how I am. Rather, we take it as a challenge. Take it as a challenge that you have this label, that you've been handed this, whatever story you tell about it, but it's something that you've been handed in order to overcome. Sometimes people are given labels by doctors or by psychiatrists, and they say, well, because this is a person of authority, this must be what it is. And while it may be true that we have a certain condition, we should not own that condition. We should not identify with it. We are always more than that condition. Perfect health, mentally, physically, emotionally, comes directly from God. And the more that we can attune into God, the more that we can have it. But we don't take these things as a label. We take them as a challenge. And we say, all right, how am I going to overcome this? How am I going to defeat it? And then we draw upon the all-powerful, all-intelligence of God that is deep within us. We look for the answers. We can look for it in books or through experts or through people we talk to or through observing our own experience. And we go to work on ourselves. We make a determination. I'm going to change this even if I die. I'm going to go with the idea that I'm out to change this. I'm out to get the better of this. And I'm going to work at it until I master it. Because God within me is already perfect and all-powerful and all-knowing. And therefore, I will master this. And I will not rest easily until I have. And every defeat is just another challenge to dig in deeper, to go after it a little bit more, until I find the answer to this, until I come to the point where I am freed from this. This is absolutely necessary. These labels that we own, these labels that we choose to call myself, they're all an illusion. Not one of them are factually true. Because from the very beginning, you are God. And to the very end, that is what you will discover, who you truly are. And when you do, you will realize that everything in between was like a bit of a dream. It was something that you once dreamed you were. But now you realize you are so much more than that. So these challenges come our way. I'd like to read to you a bit from Joel Goldsmith here. In a book, The Art of Spiritual Healing, and What is Spiritual Healing? Let me find my place here. When the Wright brothers were able to keep their plane aloft for a mere 57 seconds, they set the seal on a transportation for all time. It was inevitable that eventually we would be able to travel as we do now at 300, 400, 1,000 miles an hour. In fact, there seems to be no limit to the speed which man can attain. When the first automobile successfully traveled a block, it set the seal for all time on that type of transportation, and the era of horses and carriages came to an end. So it is when you have the experience of one first conscious realization of a transcendental presence and power, of that something which we call God, Spirit, the Christ, that sets the seal forever in your mind, and you know that one of these days, whether it is accomplished slowly or rapidly, you are going to be able to say with Paul, I live, yet not I, but the Christ liveth in me. Or with Jesus, I can of my own self do nothing. The Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. It is not too much importance, whether you or I have fewer or more problems during our 70 years, 10, 20, and 10, 20, or 30. It is of tremendous importance to the world, however, because insofar as one individual can show forth a measure of health, harmony, inner peace, joy, satisfaction, and abundance sufficient unto his needs, in that degree is that person the light of the world, the inspiration for others to follow, the light which fills them with that same hope, the same ambition, and the same willingness to sacrifice just a few hours a day to end that they also may know God. And so spiritual healing becomes embodied in consciousness through a light here and there. Sometimes we are likely to forget what an influence the life of one man or woman can be. Not one of us knows the tremendous significance of some particular moment of our lives. Any moment of any hour, there are people who have had an experience similar to that which I had late in 1928, when, while in meditation with one who was truly illumined, the Spirit descended upon me, and I was lifted out of what we might call this world. After that, the things of this world no longer attracted me, and from then on my whole life was lived in my inner being with the Bible, with metaphysical and mystical writings, and in the company of those on the spiritual path. All the rest of my life dropped away. So when you eliminate all labels in your life of limitation, of who and what you conceive yourself to be as a human being, as anything that is separated from God, then you become a tremendous source of light to this world, because Jesus said that if I be lifted up, shall lift up the entire world with me. When you are lifted up in God, you help to draw the world up. You cannot but affect this world, whether you think about this world in any particular way or not. It doesn't make any difference whatsoever. You are an essential part to this world. The world cannot do without you. And when you fall short of the self, of the true being that God created you to be from the very beginning, from the very foundation of this creation, then you take something away from this world. You harm not only yourself, but this world as well. It is equally true that when you are uplifted in God, when you are purified in God, then you help to lift this world up closer to God. And we all must be in the business of doing exactly that, living our lives not only for ourselves, but for the benefit, for the wholesomeness, for the upliftment of this entire world. When the Buddha is said to have set out on his journey of realization, he did so in the consciousness not just of himself, but also of this entire world. He was compassionate towards this world. He saw its suffering. He saw the ignorance. He saw how people lived in a state of separation. And he knew somehow, deep inside of him, there must be something greater. There must be something more. And as he discovered that within himself, then he shared it with the world in as much as he could through his teachings. But the real teaching is in what and who he discovered himself to be. That great state of nirvana, what is also called God realization, that is the most beatific, the most uplifting, the most fantastic state of a consciousness that an individual can attain to. There is nothing higher. And when we move into that state, then we truly do help to lift this world into its higher state as well. In closing, I want to read to you from the Cross and Lotus Journal, this last issue, from Memories of Mother. And it is an excerpt from the Gospel of Swami Ramdas, and so it's Mother being written about by Swami Satchidananda in that book. It begins out with M.H., Mother Hamilton, then took some typed sheets of paper from her table and said, "This is what I noted down when Satchidananda could not be with us one afternoon, and when you, Papa, said the most wonderful things. I'd asked Papa about the various states of samadhi from the subject that he went on to talk about the various sadhanas required in order to complete self-realization, stressing the need for the spiritual aspirant to be quiet and alone at times so that he might meditate uninterruptedly upon God. As he went on talking about the various practices and the stages one goes through in order to attain, I tried to determine, after thinking over the events of my busy life and the fact that I had but very little time to do any of the things that he said were necessary, just what my actual state of development was. So I said, Papa, I have never had the opportunity to do any of the things you have said. Yet in spite of the fact that I could seldom sit in meditation, the bliss of God has filled me so greatly that I have been almost helpless in it. Will you please tell me what state of development I am in? How can mere words describe the radiance which appeared on his face, the wistfulness and the look of ineffable love and tenderness? In the pause that followed, he put his hands together, as he does when he is filled to overflowing with bliss, and he said like a small, shy boy, Ramdas can only tell you that Ramdas can only tell you that you are his divine mother. He sees you as the very embodiment of God's light. You are a shining being, spreading your love, light, and bliss on all." For a moment, the whole world stood still as I got the full impact of his words and of the spirit within him, realizing that here, from the lips of God himself, was the verification of what he had told me when I was in samadhi. In the suspended state in which I found my consciousness, it seemed as though this was at once both my destiny and its fulfillment. When finally I could speak, I said, "I feel that I have attained God, but the terrible way of the cross over which I have come remains in my consciousness and makes me doubt. God has revealed to me the inner truth about much of the scriptures. What about the rest of them? Do I still have to receive that?" And he replied, "Forget the scriptures. You have risen far above them. It is not necessary for you to follow the practices laid down for others. The scriptures are only for the benefit and guidance of those who are still on the path. Let the love of God overflow within your being to enlighten others. He will use you to give his truth, his wisdom, his love to all with whom you come into contact." I said, "You mean he will supply the rest of the knowledge of the scriptures as they are needed?" He answered, "God's grace has come to you through your guru. He is working through you to do all things." And so as we set aside all of the things that we call ourself, the labels of I, me, and mine, those things that we think that we possess, just think about the day that God will tap you onto the shoulder and he says, "Come, my son, my daughter, it is time for you to leave this body consciousness and to come into my higher kingdoms, my higher realms. And you will leave everything behind." And that God, when he taps you upon the shoulder and says, "Come, it is not time for you to leave your body, but leave your body consciousness and become one with me. You will leave everything behind, everything of the humanness, and you will merge your little being into God's great being. And you will never, ever, in that state, think, oh, what I have left behind, oh, I want this, or I want that, or I missed this, or I met that, missed that. Because when you merge into God's great being, you become that universal sense. You become one with everything. Therefore, what is it that you can miss? What is it that you yearn for? You are already with it. And with it in a more deep way than you can possibly be when you're in a physical body. So it is only the ego mind that projects itself onto God and sees it as narrow and as limited and as wanting for something. That is in truth what the ego mind gives to you. So it is in truth the ego mind projects onto God what the ego is and says, why would you want that? And you can quickly agree to it. You're right, ego mind. I don't want that. And that's what you are. And that is not what God is. You cannot fool me. You cannot get me to exchange for a few paltry little trinkets the vast wealth of what God is. The vast wealth of what God is. So let us teach ourselves to disavow any limiting labels that we may place upon ourselves. Let us look to those labels that are tattooed on the inside of our brains that we refer to when we go about this world that limit us. In truth, they give us some reference to make ourselves more satisfied, but they limit us and they do not allow us to merge into our oneness with the divine. That is God's greatest gift to you. It is God's greatest bequeathment to you. It is true that we need food and clothing and the necessities in life. And so we must go after and strive for those things. But never let us mistake the gold of spirit for the fool's gold of this world. That would be a tragic error. And so striving and striving and striving, as Lori Mahasya said, and behold, one day the goal. And so feel yourself striving to remove all labels until there, if there is any label, there is only but one, and it says God. Only God. God everywhere and God within. Be it so. Now will you please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious touch
upon my mind, upon my heart, upon my entire being.
Now I am radiant. With thy love, with thy everythingness. Make me one with thee. So that we are never apart. I and thou are one. Never apart shall we be. To the great light that is within you. Like a seed ready to burst its shell and to spread that light everywhere.